Hi, everyone. It's Pat Mishu here to let you know that you are in for a very special experience. The content you are about to access is priceless. Larry Winget and I have had three different conversations this past year on topics that range from personal accountability to selling out and settling for less than you deserve, through to specific steps you can take to not only grow a pair, quote unquote, but get a life, the life you truly deserve. Be sure to have your pen and paper handy because there's gold in this audio. Remember, it's not a matter of intellectually knowing anything. It is a matter of personally applying the information you are about to hear. Enjoy, and be sure to let us both know your big takeaways by posting on our Facebook pages, okay? Larry Winget and I will both be watching for you over there. Now, also, for more information about the work that we do, please be sure to visit our websites. Mine is hirepat.com. And, of course, Larry's is larrywinget.com. Thanks for being here. Enjoy the interviews. And, again, we'll be watching for your comments. Thanks, everybody. Bye for now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special masterclass conversation with the amazing Larry Winget. You, my friends, are in for a real treat, so be sure to get your pen and paper ready because we are about to give you some of the best life lessons you have ever heard. Now, let me properly introduce my special guest today. Larry Winget is a 5 times New York Times / Wall Street Journal best-selling author, translated into over 20 languages. He is a member of the International Speaker Hall of Fame. He has starred in his own television series and appeared in national television commercials. Larry is also a regular contributor on many news shows on the topics of money, one of my favorites, personal success, another of my favorites, parenting, and business. Larry is also the trademarked pit bull of personal development. Some of Larry's TV appearances include being featured in 2 episodes of CNBC's The Millionaire Inside, star of his own PBS special, Success is Your Own Fault, a frequent business contributor on MSNBC, a regular on Fox News and Fox Business. He has appeared on other national shows, such as The Today Show, Larry King Live, and The Big Idea with Donny Deutsch. Really entertaining is the fact that Larry's been featured in 3 national Hyundai commercials. You just never know where you're going to see this man. And he has starred in A&E's A Big Spender. I also want to give you the names of Larry's 5 bestsellers, which have been translated into the 20 languages, and encourage you to get them today. Powerful and common sense content in these books, my friends. Now, you might not catch all the titles right away as I give them to you, but that's all the more reason for you to listen to this interview over and over and over again. You're going to love these books. The first one, Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life, a kick-butt approach to a better life. It's called Work for a Reason. Your success is your own damn fault. You're broke because you want to be. How to stop getting by and start getting ahead. People are idiots, and I can prove it. 10 ways you sabotage your life, money, and business. And Your Kids Are Your Own Fault. How to Raise Responsible, Productive Adults. Larry Winget is the best combination of credible content, as backed up with his 5 best-selling books and over 20 years of experience speaking to nearly 400 of the Fortune 500 companies. He is known worldwide for being direct, caustic, irreverent, in your face, and dead on right. He offers solid advice for improving your life, business, finances, and family. And I think a little YouTube birdie told me he might even be dipping into relationships sometime in the near future. Now, not often do you find someone who can bring solid information delivered in such a refreshing manner who is also funny. Now, Larry, one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you today is obvious based on your introduction. You just have a lot of good stuff to say, in my opinion. But the other reason is that as my mentor for professional speaking, I know that many entrepreneurs are listening to this interview to take away some tips on growing their business. And what I know for sure is that we make things way too complicated, and you are a master at keeping things simple. So why don't we just jump right into it and help some people out as we talk about personal responsibility for people's lives, their happiness, and their success. And I turn it over to you, the esteemed, the amazing Mr. Larry Wingett. Welcome to my world.
Hey, I appreciate that. What an introduction. My goodness, I'm so excited now. I actually want to hear what I have to say.
Well, it's going to be an amazing conversation because that you and I just like bring it to the table. And in my opinion, it all starts with identifying what you want, and that alone is huge. It's a huge challenge for many people. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I do believe that one of the biggest problems people have is getting real clear about what they'd like to have happen in their life. They sit around and say, oh, I wish, or they do New Year's resolutions or all that sort of stuff, or they listen to the influence of their spouse or their friends or whatever, thinking that's what you need to do with your life. But very few people have actually put, and I'm so glad you started this way, about get a pen and get some paper and be ready, because that is critical. You have to have pen and paper. I have millions of notes. I love to write things down, and that's where real clarity comes from. And very few people have actually sat down and put pen to paper and said, this is what I want my life to look like. Even fewer have ever sat down and put pen to paper and said, this is how my life is right now. And really, the most popular question I get always is, what does it take to be successful? The first thing you do is get three sheets of paper and write down what you want. You have to know that. And then you have to write down where you are, and then you're going to have to write down what you're going to give up to get from where you are to where you want to be.
Isn't that the clincher, though? It's that, first of all, that fear that when you write it down, it makes it real. And secondly, that whole concept of what do I have to give up? What are you talking about, giving up?
Well, I'm big on sacrifice, and I think I'm one of the very few personal development guys, certainly the ones at my level, that ever tell people success comes from giving up. It comes from sacrifice. And most people say you can have anything. No, you can't. You don't. you can't have it all. You have to choose. And so that's why I tell people all the time, you're going to have to learn to say no to a lot of things. You don't get success. You give up what's keeping you from being successful. You don't get skinny. You give up what's making you fat. You don't get rich. You give up what's making you broke. You don't get happy. You give up what's making you unhappy. All those things come from giving up. But you never know what to give up until you first determine where you are and where you want to be.
Pure and simple, just like I said in the intro. And at the same time, a little bit of an ouch for people because they're not used to hearing it like it is. People are used to being coddled, and people are used to being built up and told everything's good and you are good and it's all going to be good. You know, and that certainly plays around with the things we tell ourselves. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, we do tell ourselves everything is great, and then we surround ourselves with people who are going to say that to us, because, I mean, who wouldn't want to surround yourself with people who say, this is not your fault. It's a cold, cruel world out there. You haven't done anything wrong. You're wonderful. You're beautiful. You're special. God made you wonderful, and look at you. You're amazing. And what you really – that's a lousy friend, by the way. What you really need is someone to say, are you kidding me? You deserve better than this. I'm not going to let you by with being an idiot any longer. Stop doing that. You're better than this. That, to me, that's a real friend.
I couldn't agree more. That, you know, there's one phrase I hear a lot, and this, you know, I'm a little controversial here. I often hear it at church and with my church friends. It's like, do unto others as you would do unto yourself. And I would say, first of all, do unto yourself. So get clear on what you want. Write that down. Control that self-talk. I'm all about the self-talk piece, because even though people will say to me, you're good, you deserve this, la, 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 many of us have been conditioned, like me, French, Canadian, Catholic, military, to push back those compliments, to not be braggadocious. And so there's a real mind game going on there when I do set my goals and I do identify what I want, but then it's all like, who do you think you are?
Yeah, there is a real deservability problem. One of the very first things you have to do, and especially in terms of money, is increase your deservability. Know that you really do deserve, you deserve everything you get. If you're living a crappy life, it's because you deserve it. If you're living an amazing life, it's because you deserve it. Your thoughts, your words, your actions created the life that you're living. And if you want those to change, you have to change your thoughts, your words, and your actions. But it does come down to increase your deservability and know that you can have whatever it is you want if, and see, that's where the other people stop. They just say, you can have whatever you want. No, you can't. You can have everything you want if you're willing to do whatever it takes to get it. And so that's what it comes down to. I deserve it if I will take the action to make it happen.
And so one of the things I needed to learn to do coming out of my conditioning and my background to get what I wanted, not only shift my thinking around the deservability, but I needed to learn to take risks. What are your thoughts around that? People really do play it safe in life, right?
Well, yeah, they do play it safe, and I'm not much of a proponent of playing it safe. I think you just do what feels right at the moment. Work from your gut. And people say, well, I don't really know where to start. Well, I don't care if you do or not. Just start. And don't let fear get the best of you. You know, Susan Jeffers wrote a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Mm-hmm. You don't need the book. You need to remember that title, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. We're all, in fact, that's the way it is with all my books. You don't need the books. You need to buy the book so you can look at those titles and say, you're right, people are idiots. I'm one of them. My kids are my own fault. I do need to shut up, stop whining, get a lie. But we all are afraid of what might happen. And what might happen really rarely ever happens. So we need to get past that fear. We need to take the risk and go ahead and just take action. Don't worry about what the right thing is to do. If you do the wrong thing, you'll find out quick. If you take the action, though, and something wonderful happens, know that that never would have happened unless you stepped out and actually got started. Don't worry about how you're going to start. Just start.
Well, speaking of book titles and that fit in with this piece of the conversation, I believe you have a new book coming out soon.
Oh, I do. I have a new book coming out this fall. It's called Grow a Pair, How to Stop Being a Victim and Take Back Your Life, Your Business, and Your Sanity. I think that we've become sort of a nation of weak, spineless, whiny, complaining wussies, I really do, who don't stand up for themselves, who take bad service, who let people talk down to us, cut in line in front of us, never stand up for our rights, and I think all that has to stop. I think we sacrificed our happiness by letting people take advantage of us, and I think that needs to stop. And, you know, it's interesting that I'm talking to you, a Canadian, and I know you prepped me for the call with all the
We're nice people.
You have this big Canadian mindset of your listeners. And it's funny, a friend of mine who's a Canadian sent me an email this morning and said, and it was about how Americans would have less hassle when they travel if we became a little more Canadian. And the first thing on it is that Canadians are a little apologetic. And you mentioned that earlier.
Yes.
About kind of growing up that way, a little apologetic.
A little.
That's kind of a shame, don't you think?
I would say a lot apologetic, and I would say the conditioning is strong. And I would also say that it's all around me up here. It's all around me. And so I take a lot of criticism, quite frankly, for even going to the States, taking risks in hiring high-level coaches who are American. And people are often saying to me, again, who do you think you are? Why are you doing that? Aren't we good enough? La, la, la. So there's a certain mentality up here.
And the fact that they ask that question should tell them everything they need to know.
Should. title of a new book, I would think.
You know, which actually, as long as we're kind of fluffing each other here and you're talking about my books, you have a great book that also ties in with that that's just about to come out.
I do indeed, and thank you for that. It's called Stop Compromising and Make All the Money You Want. It's a do-it-yourself guide for starting up and starting over. And I want to help people, very similar to the content in your books, I want to help people, first of all, not make the mistakes I made over 22 years of, you talked about the whole deservability factor in life. And, you know, my upbringing caused me to live and make decisions a certain way, and I did. Then I learned to step out of it. There was life outside of that. So it is a matter of stop whining, get a life, but stop compromising, too. And I see a lot of that happening in my world.
Well, I see a lot of it across the board in everybody's world. We do compromise so much, which is sort of the reason I wrote Grow a Pair. And I love the fact that your title starts with Stop Compromising. You know, we just settle for mediocrity.
Mm-hmm.
And we settle for the fact, just like I said, somebody will deserve to give us bad service and we'll think, oh, well, that's just the way it is. And we just put up with it.
We do.
And so we put up with bad stuff. We settle when we don't have to. Nobody has to settle. And we all need that message that's in your title here. We need to stop compromising. And you're speaking, as I do in my stuff, you're speaking from this background of personal experience. It's not, this is not something you just know about and are talking about. You can talk about how you actually did that. And I think there's great strength in saying, let me tell you how I stopped compromising and how I did start over. And I think that's an amazing thing to bring to the page.
Well, thank you. I believe it's amazing, and I believe it's timely, because I'm in the baby boomer category, and I know I speak to a lot of baby boomers where, again, you wake up at a certain point, say at age 50, many of them think, oh, I need to go run a marathon. And something goes on in your head. There's a trigger at age 50, at age 60, when you realize I have wanted a certain type of life. I have compromised every step of the way, because I know I did when it came to putting my stepchildren's dreams ahead of mine, compromising for my husband's wants, ex-husband's wants and desires. And that fell over into my business. And that's where a lot of entrepreneurs on the line can relate. When it comes to that whole compromising mindset around giving away your products and services, that deservability factor again, feeling less than, not charging what you're worth, it's time to stop that compromising.
Oh, I'm with you completely, 100%. And I love that what you said about baby boomers and you do hit that 50-year-old. I think it's because we wake up someday and we say, there is less time in front of me than there is behind me. And I think that fear jumps in and goes, I'm going to miss out if I don't take action now. I think that fear is the motivator that sometimes moves us off of dead center, because we're past dead center at 50 or 60, and we need to start taking action. And somebody wrote me the other day, in fact, I did a YouTube video about it, and said, I've been told that my friends tell me if it's not done by the age of 50, then it'll never be done. And I said, all of your friends are idiots, because most people, it's true. Anybody who will say if it's not done by the age of 50, it's not going to get done, that's stupid. You know that because you took action then. I know that. I've done more great work past the age of 50 than I ever did before the age of 50. And I can give you hundreds of names of people who have done the very same thing because they said, I'm not going to do this. I am going to stop compromising, and I need to figure out what right now that I'm going to take action, because this is my life and I deserve happiness.
Yeah, and many of us at that baby boomer age also give our head a shake and think, is this the life I wanted? Is this the way I want to end my life? And I hear this often as well with entrepreneurs. Is this the reason I got into business? Is this the kind of business that I wanted? And for me, starting over, not just a new life at age 56, but relaunching my coaching and speaking business at that age as well, not only took identifying what I want, writing it down, controlling my self-talk, taking big risks when I moved across the country to start over. One of the other things I needed to learn, which is what I speak about in my book about Stop Compromising, is that to launch a business and to grow it and develop it and make a difference, you've got to make money. You've got to make money. And when you compromise by giving things away, you compromise by undervaluing, that's not going to take you anywhere. And as you say so eloquently, you're broke because you want to be.
Yeah. I was dealing with a person this week on a television show that will air one of these days. And they said, I really want to leave my mark on the world through my business and through my talent. And I said, good. And they said, but I really don't care anything about money. And I said, stop, you're an idiot. You're not ever going to leave your mark on the world through your talent or
yeah.
through your business unless you figure out how to make money. Because businesses have one priority, and that's to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not profitable, you're not going to have a business. You're not going to be able to market. You're not going to be able to exploit your talent so people know about it. You have got to make money. And somehow we've, especially I think with the baby boomers, and I'm glad you brought that up, I think we've almost made them ashamed to make money.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing more honorable than to create a business that is profitable, that makes money, so then you can spend that money and share it and help other people be profitable. There's nothing wrong with it and nothing more honorable.
I agree, because poverty is not attractive, and poverty does not position you to make a difference. Money does. And one of the powerful lessons I've learned over the last few years in working with my mentors has been to ask for what I want. Because, again, growing up with my background, I was taught to be independent. I was taught to do it myself and take care of myself. And so I did. And so to shift my thinking around asking, that was huge because, quite frankly, I didn't want to be broke. I didn't. It's
well,
huge.
Well, the fear of poverty is a great motivator, isn't it?
It totally and absolutely is. And when you come out of a divorce situation like I did, which was financially devastating to me, and again, my choices, my decisions, I take responsibility, but it sucked. So I really needed to learn to ask for help, ask for what I wanted, and to get out there and take my message in a profitable and bigger way.
Well, and I admire the fact that you've done so much in really a short period of time. Don't you think it's a short period of time?
4 years, very short.
I know. It's just incredible the turnaround you had in your life and the fact that I can't wait to read the book because I know all the great stuff that's going to be in it that will help other people figure out how to do that in their own lives.
Well, thank you. And again, part of my message is, first of all, it's up to me, right? It's that personal responsibility. Nobody else is going to fix my life for me. It doesn't matter
what
age I am.
Yeah, no one's coming to the rescue. People need to understand that.
Yeah, there's no white knight out there or whatever color knight you want to call it. And so it's up to me. If it's to be, it's up to me. And yet, I believe it's Suzanne Evans who has this great line that you've got to do it yourself, but you can't do it alone.
Yep.
And I love that. So I have learned to ask for what I want. And that's how we ended up on this call. So thank you for being part of this great content to share to the people who are listening and who really do want to make a difference. Now, here's one of the other powerful lessons I've learned. And I know that you speak to this often as well. You've got to surround yourself with the right people.
Well, your income is going to be on average of the five people closest to in your life. So what I'd like for everybody to do is, as long and you've told them all, have paper in front of them. Think of the five people that you're closest to and then write down their names. And you know how much money they make. Just write that down, how much money they make. And you don't have to call and ask them. You pretty much know. And then average that. That's how much money you make. That's just the reality. We all make about the same money as the five people closest to us. Now, what's the message there? Dump your friends and get richer friends. And people think, oh, my God, that's cruel. No, it's not cruel. The reality is that if you want to improve your life, improve the quality of your friendships. Improve the quality of the people that you surround yourself with.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to read better books, ask people what they're reading. If they say, well, I read Star Magazine that I get when I check out at the grocery store, listen, you just need to turn to that person and say, you are too stupid for me to be a friend with. I want people who say, Listen, I've got a stack of books you would not believe. The best one I just read was Be the Best at What Matters Most by Joe Calloway. I'm reading Fred Factor 2.0 by Mark Sanborn there, and they just are – they will overwhelm you with the list of books. And you go, we need to be friends. And so you can look at the people around you. And so you're exactly right. You have to surround yourself with people who move you closer to where you want to be. If you surround yourself with people who will encourage you to stay where you are, actually what they're doing is encouraging you to stay where they are. You're
right.
Never going to move forward.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one of my great mentors, Lou Tice from the Pacific Institute, always said to me and helped me remember that people with low self-esteem will not let people with high self-esteem rise above them. That was huge for me. Huge.
Yeah.
And the other one-liner that stuck with me is to stop comparing the inside of me to the outside of somebody else.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a writer downer.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, stop comparing the inside of me to the outside of somebody else, because everybody goes out with their mask on. Everybody has a story. Everybody has an issue, and you just don't know. You just don't know. Now, in the conversation you and I had, Larry, when I was at your house and we were mapping out my book and my speaking and all of this great stuff, and we were talking about one of my key points, which is eliminate toxic people from your life. One of my takeaways was when you said to me, sometimes you can't eliminate those people. You need to remove yourself from that circle.
Yeah, toxic people are hard to run off. They don't go away. They need to be toxic in your presence in order to bring you down, all the things that you've just mentioned there. So they're not going to go away. And so what you have to do is you have to go away. And that means you got to divorce them. You did. I did.
Yep.
You got to divorce them. And you got to fire them. If it's an employee, you got to fire them. We spend way too much time in business trying to make bad employees good. That doesn't work. You can't make a bad employee good. They're bad because they want to be bad. Good employees are good because they want to be good. Bad employees are bad because they're perfectly happy being a bad employee. And so you have to remove yourself from those kind of situations. Fire them. Divorce them. Run them off. Don't hang out with them. Learn to say no. It goes on that give-up list that we started this whole conversation with.
Yeah.
And when I talk about sacrifice and what you're going to give up, the very first place you should look is the people who are in your life who are toxic and who bring you down.
And I'm sure you've heard the comment that I get a lot, and people say to me, oh, well, it's easy for you.
Does that make you mad?
Yes.
They have no idea how hard it's been for you or how hard it's been for me.
They have no idea, and I hear it all the time. And so when I explain a bit, you know, people will say, well, you don't know who I live with. Well, I know who I used to live with, and so don't be telling me it's easy for me. And so, you know, I run down the list with them to let them know I walk my talk, and I know you walk your talk. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
But I'm estranged from my own twin sister. Now, in the Catholic Church, that's probably almost like a mortal sin, because we know what PR and TV and fairy tales all say about twins.
Yeah.
So when you do identify what you want, you do make a decision, you do take personal responsibility, you do whatever it takes, right?
Well, that whatever it takes is really it right there.
Yep.
I read a great book years ago by Mike Hernacki called The Ultimate Secret to Getting Everything in Life You Want. Great title, The Ultimate Secret. I don't believe in secrets, but it's still a great title. And the ultimate secret, according to him, was you got to be willing to do whatever it takes in order to get what you want. And that stuck with me for 25 years. You got to be willing to do whatever it takes. Now, what he made was a great point is you rarely have to actually do whatever it takes. Sometimes you do, but you've always got to be willing to do. It's that willingness. And I discovered when I become willing, and that's really kind of what you're talking about here, stop compromising. Be willing to do what it takes. Things do get much easier just being more willing.
And accept the consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's what some people don't realize and recognize when they look at us and say, oh, it's easy for you. When you get through the rain, it's easier. And so really the point in summing up all of this, when we talk about personal responsibility, whether it comes to our personal life or, as you said, finances, relationships, business, I have coached some women who have started out with me down a certain path. You're going to love this, Larry. It's because they've had a passion and they're excited about doing a certain thing that fits their purpose, and then they're miserable in 3 months, 6 months, a year.
Yeah.
And what I've coached them is, and I've said to them, if you aren't happy with who you are and what you're doing, then change it. And they look at me like, what? It's like people need permission.
You're right. People do need permission. I talked to a woman this week and said, I absolutely hate what I do. I said, then why don't you just stop doing it? And this, her face changed, her body language changed. And she said, what do you mean? I said, if you hate what you do, why don't you not do that anymore? I mean, this is a stupid conversation. Don't sit there and tell me how much you hate what you do, and you've hated it for the last 9 years. She's hated her job for 9 years. I said, why don't you just not do that anymore? And she said, well, yeah, I guess I could do that. And I go, yeah, I guess you could. So walk away from me right now and go stop doing that and start doing something else. And she goes, thank you. And I thought, this is easy.
Yeah, no kidding. And that's when all the yeah buts kick in, though. And that really is part of our conditioning, too. Yeah, but,
yeah,
yeah, but, yeah, but. Yeah, but I've got to pay the bills. And yeah, but I've been in this job for 22 years, and I'm a year away from retirement. And yeah, but. So they've just got to learn to get off their butts.
Yeah, yeah. Their butts in every way. The B-U-T-T-S kind. And the B-U-T-S kind.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to say butt, and you need to get off your butt. I've got a posting that's coming up very, very soon about yeah butts.
And where would we find that posting, Mr. Larry Wingett?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. You know, I am the easiest guy to find there is. If you can get to a computer and you're on the Internet, if you can type in Larry Wingett, W-I-N-G-E-T, you'll find a ton of stuff. You can go to my website and get links to a lot of stuff and watch a lot of videos by me. You can go to YouTube. I even do a weekly series called Ask Larry Anything, where people can ask me whatever they'd like to know. My books have done well, which means they're going to be in every bookstore that you go in. They should be readily available. They're certainly available online. You can follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn and all that stuff. I'm easy to find, Pat.
You are, and you're a pleasure to find, because, quite frankly, you not only do provide great content, simple, clear, concise, but funny. And really, I think people need to laugh more. We need to laugh more at ourselves. And so as we wrap this up, Mr. Larry Wingett, what would be your one call to action for anybody who's listening to us?
I'm going to end the way I started. I want everybody who's on this call to get 3 sheets of paper, write down what your life looks like right now, write down the way you would like for your life to look, and then decide today what you're going to give up, at least in one area, what you're going to give up to get from where you are to where you want to be.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And my two bits for the rest of you out there, just keep one thing in mind. If it's to be, it's up to me. It is your personal responsibility to live your happiest life, your fullest life, and be the best person you can be. And try it. You'll like it. So we thank you for listening, Mr. Larry Wingett. An absolute
Pat,
pleasure.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I have enjoyed it so much. Great conversation.
Well, thank you, Larry. And I look forward to getting this out to the people who are ready, willing, and wanting to make a change. To all of you who are listening, we thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure interviewing Mr. Larry Wingett. You can find him online, LarryWingett.com, or anywhere else. You Google that name. He's out there in a great way. Thank you, Larry. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye now. Of personal development. And I am honored, I am thrilled, I am delighted, because Larry Wingett is also my mentor and my coach, and I am so thrilled to introduce him to you, our audience up here in Canada. And we've got Larry Wingett calling in from gorgeous Phoenix. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. I appreciate you having me. I really do. I always just love talking to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I am thrilled and excited to introduce you to my audience up here, not just locally in London, but for anyone listening in on the web, because, well, quite frankly, I talk about you all the time. So I figured it was time to talk with you and to you instead of about you. And so the fun part of this, Mr. Wingett, I know you have a new book out, and that is what we're going to talk about today. Grow a Pair, How to Stop Being a Victim, Take Back Your Life, Your Business, and Your Sanity. Now, I know you've been in the business, in the industry, a long time. What prompted Larry Wingett to get into this anyway?
You mean with this book or to get into the whole industry?
This industry, because, you know, I've been on the road too, and I've been speaking for a few years, but in this industry as a whole, what prompted that? Because I know you've got a business background.
I do have a business background, and I've owned a couple of businesses. I was an area sales manager for AT&T, left that when the Bell system broke apart, and started my own telecommunications company. I've done a lot of different things. But, you know, if somebody came up to me throughout my entire life and said, what do you really want? I want an audience. I like having an audience. And so, I mean, it's just a natural thing for me to stand on stage and talk about things. So I love that part of it. I also found out that I have a point of view that is a little different than others. And by having a point of view and by having a willingness to go on stage and express it, I believe that you can find a following. So I got into the self-help industry for a lot of different reasons. One, I like the industry. I like seeing people grow. But it's also a good business fit for me. I can do something I enjoy, I'm good at, I get to say whatever I want to say, and people will pay me for it. And, frankly, it's a great business to be in from a financial standpoint if you're good at it.
Well, there's a good reason right there, that's for sure. Now, I've read this book a few times, and I'm just delighted you autographed a personal copy for me, so thank you for that, too. I've read the book. There's a ton of content. We could do a five-hour show on this easily, but I know today what we're going to talk about, first and foremost, is why you wrote this book. The second piece of what we're going to move on into is how did we become a nation of wimps? You do tell it like it is, Larry.
Yes, I do.
Thirdly, how does this problem, being wimps, manifest in our daily lives? And then, after the break, we're going to talk about how do we grow a pair? And seriously, I took so many notes in that section. It was like, let me count the ways. There are 34 ways in this book on how to grow a pair. And what are the benefits? And then lastly, I want to talk about, so what next for Larry and how do we get this book anyway? So let's jump right on in. It's an interesting title. Where'd that come from?
Well, you hear it a lot. It's just one of those things people have said for years and years that I've always heard, just telling people to grow a pair. And it doesn't have to do with, it's not about being a man or any of those kind of things. It's for everyone. I know lots of men who don't have a pair, and I know lots of women who do have a pair. So it's not about the masculine or the feminine. It's really not about what's between your legs. It's what's between your ears. It's about developing an attitude where you are in control of your life, that you make the decisions for your life, that you haven't become a victim and are constantly reacting to things, but you're a proactive, in control, non-victim person who is in charge. That's the place I'd like for us to get to, and we've lost that.
And oh, what a world that would be. And so the quiet does beg the question, where did everyone's pair go?
You know, when you look at what happened to us as a society, I think the number one enemy of having a pair and growing a pair, and might be the really sort of the whole father or mother of the entitlement culture, is the fact that we have become so politically correct. We are scared to death to just speak our mind for fear of hurting someone's feelings. I think that comes from the fact that if we say something and somebody gets their feelings hurt, we're afraid that our feelings might get hurt. We've become, all of us are so susceptible to the opinion of other people. We seek validation through what others think of us instead of how we feel about ourselves.
You know, one part in this book that I really enjoyed in that section on page 15, where you're referencing many believe they are owed health care benefits, regardless of the fact that they destroyed their own health by smoking or overeating and usually both. And this really came home to me yesterday as I was traveling, and I was sitting in the Chicago airport watching people, and I was watching for hours as they were coming out of McDonald's or coming out of, I think one of the places was TJ Fridays or something like that. And I was just watching the size of these people and the food in their hands. Now, not being judgmental at all, but knowing I was going to be talking to
you. Oh, of course you are. Remember what you've heard me talk about. It's fine to be judgmental as long as you're willing to be judged by the same measure.
Yeah, I was judging. For sure I was. I was actually preparing for my conversation with you, thinking, well, now, isn't that interesting? It's all around. It is all around. And so that sense of entitlement certainly prevails. And I know as you move along in the book, you referenced the self-help movement. Let's talk about that a little bit. Should we blame them? Should we not blame them?
Well, the self-help movement started out, I mean, I've been around it a long time, and I was a fan of the movement before I ever got into the movement. But I remember 30, 35 years ago hearing Zig Ziglar say, you can be whatever you want to be, do whatever you want to have, go wherever you want to go, as long as you believe in yourself. What he talked about is believe in yourself enough to do the self-improvement. Remember, it used to actually be called self-improvement industry before it went into the self-help industry, mm-hmm. to do the self-improvement so you could go out and do the work to have what you wanted to have, be what you wanted to be, go wherever you wanted to go. That's what it was all about. We bastardized that message along the way, and we turned it from you can be whatever you want to be, do whatever you want to do, have whatever you want to have, as long as you believe and increase your deservability so people will bestow it upon you. We turned it around. It went from self-improvement to self-help. I don't believe in helping people. I don't. And I get accused of that all the time. I stand on stage and say, I don't care one thing about people. And you know I mean it.
Yes.
I don't care about people. I don't need them. I don't care one thing about taking care of anybody. I am in this industry to teach people to take care of themselves. When people care enough about themselves that they will do the work on themselves, that's when real improvement happens. Not when you give people something because they feel like they deserve it or you want to give it to them out of some need you have. Mm-hmm. People have to work for it. We've gotten away from that.
We certainly have, and that last statement you made, that will hit people right between the eyes. It really does come down to our own responsibility, our own conditioning. One of the statements you also make here in the book is people will do whatever they can get away with. I found that quite interesting because our audience here is primarily women entrepreneurs, and women entrepreneurs locally, women entrepreneurs around the world. I am one, and so I'm going to be making some statements here that might irritate some people, and I'm quite okay with that. One of the things I've recognized in working with entrepreneurs and being one with my own coach is that we tolerate stupidity and poor performance. We let people get away with bad behavior. Let's talk about that cycle a bit.
Well, that's true, certainly, in how we deal with others, and you started this whole thing off by talking about customer service.
Yep.
If you let people deliver bad customer service to you, then you are guilty by association. You have become an accessory to the crime because you allowed them to get by with it. Once you call people on it and make them start to think about it, then that's when you start to alter their behavior. Before we did this call this morning, I was on another call, and it was set up for a radio interview and to record this little commercial for them. This was the third time they had scheduled with me. And when I called in, they said, we're not quite ready yet again. Could you call back in 30 minutes? And I said, let's get real clear. We won't do this ever, ever again. I'm done with you. You're unprofessional. You have disrespected my time. They said, is that really fair? And I said, it is for me. And here's what the whole deal is. I am teaching you a lesson today. It's a valuable business lesson that you don't get to treat people that way. It will make no difference with you and me. I hope to improve it for the next guy. When you call somebody on their bad customer service, it's not going to really make much difference for you. But you are obligated to try and improve it for the next guy. Mm-hmm. If we all did that, customer service would improve because you hold them accountable. The next person that orders that omelet, they'll probably get a better omelet, Pat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They probably will. And quite frankly, I just, again, had read your book. I've read it about 5 times now. And I was actually on that page, Larry Winget, where you reference customer service. And I thought, well, then it behooves me to get that different omelet. And so you do talk in the book about the fact that we are a needy bunch. And you mentioned, have you noticed how needy we have become as a society? We've lost our independence. And the one statement that jumps out here is the need to blame others. It's not my fault. This is, I believe, a way of thinking that really ticks you off. Why is that? Well, I know
it
for
really
sure.
It really ticks me off?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and sadly, it should tick us all off.
But it doesn't.
It really should. You know, and that's what comes with too much tolerance. We don't force people to accept. I believe that what I do in life is just hold a mirror up to people and reflect back their own bad behavior. I don't have to accuse anybody of being stupid. I hold a mirror up and say, let me show you your results. Your results are the result of your thoughts, your words, and your actions. You caused this. I don't have to get a real accusatory with them. I just hold that mirror up and let them see what they have done to themselves. And so that's sort of where it comes from. And if we all did that to each other, and then we stood in front of the mirror ourselves just a bit and looked at it and said, look, I did this. You know, I did this to myself. And so this whole thing of blame, people love to blame others because no one holds them accountable. It's easy to get by with blame. We've become a society based in blame because nobody says, no, you did this. You don't get to blame this on anybody else. You did this, and let me prove to you how you did that. See, so we have some accountability of our own. It goes back to that people will do whatever they can get by with. We've let people get by with blaming. That's why there's so much blaming going on.
We have, and again, I love that mirror reference because I will say I've been in a few sessions with you, Larry, over a few days, and I leave with a massive headache. And the reason, seriously, and I mean this, in a positive way, it's not so much the learning that is going on, and you give great content. I get the headache because I have the mirror up in front of my face so often as you're speaking, and I do recognize areas for improvement for me. That gives me a headache because there's lots of areas for improvement, and it does come down to personal accountability. One of your statements I love is, if your life sucks, it's because you suck.
Yep, and that means that you have to understand that everything that's going on in your life, every bad thing in the world, you caused it. Now, here's the good side to this. Every good thing that's going on in your life, that's your fault too. If you're rich, that's your fault. If you're successful, that's your fault. If you have great kids, that's your fault. Fault is a word that bothers people, and they consider it to be negative. Mm-hmm. Fault to me means that is a responsibility that you get to own. And so fault can be a good thing. Hey, I'm rich. That's my fault.
Yeah.
I did the work to make that happen. So everything in your life that's going on, at some level, you created. Now, somebody out there listening to us will say, no, that's not fair. Look at this thing that happened to me. I honestly didn't create it. I will give in that there are sometimes in life, not often, but sometimes bad things just happen to good people. When that does happen, how you react to it is still your fault. So you still have responsibility.
Totally agree with that. And I will say, as I'm moving forward in the book here, the few pages that really jumped out at me, now I'm coming, full disclosure here, I'm coming from a French-Canadian Catholic military background. And the pages I felt you wrote just for me were pages 26, 27, 28, where you're referencing our need as a population, the need for approval, the need to feel special and loved. I grew up in a crowd of 9 kids, so you got to really find your way there. And the need to make everyone happy. Let's speak about those a little bit, particularly where it speaks to women in business. The need for approval.
Well, it's going to, you could say it easier than I could.
Okay, I can,
being,
and I will.
Being a woman entrepreneur, you can address it, and no one will say, well, of course, she's a woman. She can say that. If I say it, it's going to sound sexist. However, I do believe that women naturally are more nurturing, and men are a little more cold-blooded.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And do you agree with that?
I totally agree with that.
And because women are more nurturing, they have a harder time disciplining their employees, imposing consequences on their employees, because they believe that employees should love them, and if they love them as this nurturing leader and boss, then they will perform for them. That's ridiculous.
And it's ineffective, and you don't make money.
No.
And you don't make money.
You will absolutely corrupt those people who are out there doing their jobs, because they will watch you be too soft and too easy, and they will say, if she lets them by with that, then I can get by with that. And then performance of everyone in the organization will dip because of that. So I believe that you're absolutely correct. Women entrepreneurs are going to have a little bit more of a problem with that need for approval and needing to be liked than most men.
Well, I can say in my business as a coach, and I used to work as an executive coach, a leadership coach. Now I work especially and primarily with women entrepreneurs. It was critical for me to get past that need for approval, to be a better coach, an effective coach, a productive coach. So, like I said, this one just jumped out at me, and because I have the blessing and actually taking action and working with you, this has been huge in my business, and I wanted to point it out for any woman entrepreneur out there. Seriously, I mean, this is a book every entrepreneur should have, Grow a Pair. Just when we finish with the interview, everyone should run out and get a copy. The second one around here is The Need to Feel Special and Loved. This, I believe, is a downfall of many women entrepreneurs. We just want to be loved, Larry.
You know, is it better to be loved or is it better to be respected? It's a very simple question. Any leader understands it's much better to be respected. I don't want people to love me. I don't need people to like me. I don't need anybody else's approval to validate the fact that I'm a good guy or I've done a bad thing or whatever. I know who I am, what I believe. I know when I exceed my expectations, and I know when I fall short. I need to be respected by the people who look to me. And respect comes to a person who understands who they are, knows what they believe, is willing to stand up for their beliefs, and stand up to others for their beliefs.
Yeah, and I will say that was a huge shift for me, again, in the last few years, and it's made a huge difference in my business. So I thank you for that lesson. And here's one I know that is prevalent. It's the need to make everyone happy. Listen, I grew up that way. That was my father's expectation of me. I stepped up to the plate, I grabbed it, I ran with it, and I was the happy maker. And I could tell you, that doesn't get you anywhere. And as you say here, the constant need to make everyone else happy at the cost of your own happiness will destroy you. Been there, been
absolutely,
through the rain.
Absolutely, it will.
Yeah.
Besides that, Pat, everybody just needs to understand, you're not going to make everybody happy. You're just not. It is a waste of time and energy because it is an impossibility. You cannot make everyone happy. I don't care how wonderful you are, someone is not going to like it. Just get comfortable with it. It's more about you being happy with who you are. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing. And then when you are, you will attract people to you who understand that and respect you for it.
And there's a big life lesson right there, business aside, huge life lesson. One of my other favorites, because it fits in with my point of view in working with women entrepreneurs and just life in general now, is on page 29. It's the need to compromise between right and wrong. And where you say here, life is full of gray areas. Now listen, Larry, most people, and especially me growing up in a Catholic background, and my father was saying, no, you need to get into the nunnery, talk about black and white, that was it. You actually embrace gray areas.
Well, I don't think we should live in the gray. I like black and white, and I live my life black and white. I really do believe it's either right or wrong, it's good or bad, mm-hmm. either on the way or in the way, it's hello or goodbye. That's what I think. I do understand, though, and don't deny the fact that there are lots of gray areas in life. And so what we have to do is know that there are gray areas, understand that we don't get trapped in them, where we keep one foot in the good and one foot in the bad, or one foot in the moving forward and one foot in moving backwards, but understand that they are there and move through them while we are figuring out who we are. I don't embrace the gray. I believe that we have to acknowledge that it exists and know how to live through it.
So for people who are living in the gray area, what would be your thoughts around how that relates to compromising in life.
Well, I'm not a fan of compromise. I'm not. I am a fan of working things out.
Right.
And in business, oftentimes you have to sit down and work things out. Where I get a little bit of what I want, you get a little bit of what you want, we both get a lot of what we'll be able to put up with and live with. That's how business works sometimes. That just is. But it doesn't mean there's some things you never compromise. And one of the steps I give you in how to grow a pair is to figure out the things that you will never compromise
mm-hmm.
on. You ought to have at least five things you're not going to compromise. Me, I won't be lied to. I just won't talk. You can't. If you lie to me, I will cut you off at the knees. Our friendship will be over. Our business relationship will be over. I'm done with you because you have destroyed our trust. And if I can't trust you, then we can't be in business together. We can't have a relationship. I won't be lied to. That is one of my I will never compromise. What's one of yours? I mean, you have them. Everybody has them.
Yeah.
Everybody should sit down and say, what are the things that I believe in so much that I will never compromise? And then I don't care what you're faced with. Don't compromise. You'll hate yourself for it.
Or end up writing a pretty good book like I did after I learned all the lessons about compromise, because it really pretty much destroyed my life a few years ago. And so I love listening
to you. You call yourself the queen of compromise, don't you?
I do. Well, that's the former me.
I mean, I've heard you refer to yourself as the yes. queen of compromise in the past.
That's right. I was the queen of compromise during my 22 years of marriage. Once I grew a pair and recognized what I wanted my life to look like, feel like, and be like, and stepped out and stepped up, then I grew a big pair. So I compromise no more. And you have sections in the book where you've got the opportunity for really good reflection and exercises here. It's another reason I just love this book. And so, yeah, no longer. That queen of compromise doesn't live here anymore, Larry.
Well, and you should be very proud of that, and I know you are very proud of that.
I am.
And with that compromise, here's what I like about your story, Pat. With the compromise came real sacrifice. You had to give up a lot.
Yes, I did. I chose to give up a lot because I recognized the price I was paying. And that holds true for everyone in life, in business. Compromise does not work.
And everything comes at a price. If you're going to pay the price whether you want to or not, are you going to pay the price to move forward or are you going to pay the price to stay stuck? Because everything comes at a price, and staying stuck is much more expensive in the long run.
Well, very expensive in many ways, because I know for me it was not just about health and wealth, but just so much more emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually. And again, I would say to anyone who is feeling like they are living in that state, then you do need to run, not walk, run, and get yourself a copy of this book, Grow a Pair by Larry Winget. Now, the fun part of this, Larry, we're going to come back in the second half hour, and we're going to talk about what having a pair looks like, how we grow a pair, and most importantly, what are the benefits. So stay with us, everyone. We're going to take a short break. Get your pens handy. Get another piece of paper. Refresh your coffee. Stay with us. We'll come back with, oh, so much more with my special guest, Larry Winget.
This is London's volunteer-fueled radio station, 94.9 CHRW.
Hip-hop junkies unite. Thursday nights from midnight to 2 a.m. Tune into True School Hip-Hop. DJ Hank Jones has just what you need. Old school rap, we got that. Underground hip-hop, you know we got that. East Coast, West Coast, check, check. Gangnam Style, no. True School Hip-Hop, only on CHRW 94.9 FM.
Is London's only independent music broadcast, showcasing some of our area's most talented artists, bands, and personalities. Tune in to CHRW every Friday from 3:30 to 6 p.m. while your hosts Jimmy James and Brandon Eady spin all the best indie bands from London. Listen in for show announcements, ticket giveaways, and band interviews. London Indie Underground on CHRW.
Today.
Everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to The Best of Business with me, Pat Michaud, your host and founder of WealthyWomenLeaders.com. We are live at 94.9 on your FM dial, and those of you listening to us around the world, chrwradio.ca. And be sure to run on over to Twitter, too, hashtag Best of Business, and let's get a conversation going there. I am so excited, and I'm thrilled for all of you that I get to introduce you to Larry Winget, our special guest today, 6 times New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author, just released a brand new book called Grow a Pair, How to Stop Being a Victim and Take Back Your Life, Your Business, and Your Sanity. I am so excited to bring this information to all of you out there because, quite frankly, I know the benefit of growing a pair. I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and have a new life. And I'll tell you, it's the way to go. Larry, are you there?
I am there.
And we're back. And I just knew that I knew this time was going to fly. So in the first half hour, we were talking about how you got into the industry. Why did you write Grow a Pair? Really, and humorously, how did we become a nation of wimps? And how does this problem manifest in our daily lives? And as I was saying to you in the first half hour, anytime I'm around you, I leave with a headache because it just, and I do mean that in a loving way, I seriously have never been around anyone who represents honesty and integrity in the way that you do. And I love it. I always want more of it. I always grow from it. And so, again, this book, Grow a Pair, I can see why it's become a bestseller. It is so needed. So thank you for making the time to be with us, Larry.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
So what does having a pair look like anyway? I got to tell you, and this was a really interesting question to me because, as I mentioned again in the first half hour, the environment I grew up in was very much, these are my words, very much, I was surrounded by wimpy thinking. And, you know, it became part of who I was and how I thought and how I acted. And since I've changed my life and I'm hanging around with different people now, and that's a key part, we know, what does it look like? A lot of people just don't know.
Well, you can see somebody who has a pair. You can tell by looking at them. They carry themselves with confidence. They stand a little straighter. They don't hesitate. They don't use a lot of weak language. And weak language to me is they have to preface everything. Well, in my humble opinion, why is your opinion humble? Are you proud of your opinion? Watch on Facebook how people post. In my humble opinion, there is nothing humble about my opinion. I am proud of it. I am glad to voice it. I am confident in what I have to say about it. My opinion is not humble. It's mine. So when you watch people who have a pair, they carry themselves well. They speak better. And I'm not talking about you have to speak like you're a truly learned person. It's just a person who is comfortable in their own skin and not hesitant to be who they are. Let me tell you what, we don't see as many people with a pair as we do people who don't have a pair. And that's why people with a pair are often confusing to those who don't have a pair. They're considered rude.
Yes.
People who have a pair, they're not rude. They're considered arrogant and obnoxious and mean. I get called all of those things. We've reached the point in society where the truth is considered mean.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is not mean. The truth is just the truth. The truth isn't nice either. It's just the truth. The truth doesn't care whether you like it or approve of it. The truth doesn't care whether you want to hear it. The truth is always the truth. And so people who have a pair live their truth, speak their truth, and know their truth.
And you're right, they do stand out. And I know from, again, my experience in my younger days and just from the way I was brought up too, and not that I use that as an excuse, it's what I was around, and I became the peacemaker. And I learned that when I said things that made people happy, then I felt accepted and I felt approved and I felt loved. And, yeah, we see where that got me. Anyway, one of the things I, again, enjoyed in your book on page 49 or 41 was the challenge to stop and make a list of the people who, in our opinion, have a pair. And one of the first names that came to mind, because I was thinking about business, was Kevin O'Leary, who is known as Mr. Wonderful, both in the U.S. on Shark Tank and in Canada on Dragon's Den. And one of his attributes that sticks out for me is his honesty, which can throw off some people coming into the tank. But some of the other ones, and some of our my listeners will recognize, is Arlene Dickinson from Dragon's Den as well. Tina Fey, I see, is one who's got a pair. Larry Winget's on my list. Suzanne Evans. Lou Tice, many people who know, is one of my first mentors and taught me to grow a small pair. Well, that's what I took away from it, but now it's getting bigger and better. So this is a really great exercise for people to do. And so,
and the exercise really is just think of the people you admire most in the world.
Yeah.
And then just write down what attribute that you admire about them.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people probably who have a pair, and then you have to ask yourself, what can I do to emulate that attribute?
It's a really great exercise, really great exercise. So then when we recognize that, and one of the next steps can be to surround yourself with people like that, that would lead to another step on how do you grow a pair? And I know that many people are sitting out there thinking, yeah, fine for you guys to say. But one of the things you referenced in here on page 46 is when I changed myself, the way I dealt with the world changed. When I grew a pair, the way the world is didn't bother me nearly as much because I was suddenly in control. I just thought that was fabulous, and I wanted to share an excerpt here. Larry, when we're together, you often reference the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, and I know you've participated, and one of my favorites was on page 72 of one of the editions, and I can't even tell you which one because I just tore this page out, and I carry it with me. I've carried it for years, and it talks about starting with yourself. It says, the following words were written on the tomb of an Anglican bishop in 1100 AD in the crypts of Westminster Abbey. This really fits in line with your chapter here. When I was young and free and my imagination had no limits, I dreamed of changing the world. As I grew older and wiser, I discovered the world would not change. So I shortened my sights somewhat and decided to change only my country. But it too seemed immovable. As I grew into my twilight years, in one last desperate attempt, I settled for changing only my family, you know, those closest to me. But alas, they would have none of it. And now as I lie on my deathbed, I suddenly realize if I had only changed myself first, then by example I would have changed my family. From their inspiration and encouragement, I would then have been able to better my country. And who knows, I may even have changed the world. That's, I had to bring that with me. I carry it in my purse all the time, but your book really prompted me to pull it out again and have another look. This is how you do change yourself, isn't it, Larry? One little step at a time.
Yeah, and I spend a lot of time in the book talking about changing the world and those people who mistakenly believe that they can and set that as their goal. If your goal is to change the world, you're going to be disappointed because the world doesn't want to change. The best you can ever do is change your world. And the very first thing I talk about in growing a pair is to remind yourself, you have to fix yourself first. You can't fix your kids. You can't fix your family. It all starts with you, just you. And one of the very first things that I talk about in fixing yourself is that you have to have some plans for your life. If you don't know which way you're going to go, then you're never going to know when you get there or how to get there. So get some plans. People who have a pair, they have big, bold, ballsy, brash plans for their life.
Yeah.
So if people right now are trying to figure out how to grow a pair, I say it's because they don't have a plan, because a plan puts you in control. I work with a lot of people who have money issues. And people who have money issues, they have no budget. No budget. I don't care how broke you are, how behind you are, upside down you are, the minute you get it all down on paper and you put together a physical budget on paper in black and white, that step alone, you haven't gotten any richer, but that step alone puts you more in control and changes the way you feel about your financial situation, because now you have a black and white plan. So the first thing people can do who are having a problem having a pair is to sit down with pen and paper. And I believe pen and paper and not a notepad and not a laptop and not a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down with pen and paper and write down how you want your life to look.
I thought you were going to carry on there, because now I am mesmerized. I'm on page 86. I hopped right ahead when you talked about that, because it really, I'm talking to the world of entrepreneurship now. You reference on page 86 and page 87, people with a pair carry cash. I've never heard a statement like that before, but only when I started making real money in my business and having cash in my pocket, so unlike the life I had when I was married because of the situation I allowed to have happen, in my life now, carrying cash makes a huge difference in feeling like and acting like I have a pair. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, I am a big believer in carrying cash for a lot of reasons. One, I don't like credit cards. So when somebody comes up to me and I sell books back of the room, like a lot of speakers and so forth, and they come back there and say, I don't have $20. I don't need $20. I've got an American Express titanium card. And I go, good for you. If you want my book, you need $20. So I don't care about your American Express titanium card. And besides, what kind of a person doesn't have $20 in their pocket? Really, what kind of person can't pull $20 out of their pocket? Cash, first of all, it's more convenient. The other way, it's a better tool for keeping track of whether you have money and don't have money. I always suggest people convert to cash if they're having financial problems, because when the cash is gone, they're broke. That's much better than going right past broke and charging it up on the credit cards. But mostly it's because when you carry cash, you have a feeling of prosperity. And that feeling of prosperity will make you carry yourself in a more bold way. You will feel differently. And so I believe that you live light and you carry heavy.
That's good. That's a writer downer. Do you want to repeat that one for us?
Live light and carry heavy. Have a pocket full of money. And then don't get weighed down with all the possessions of the world and thoughts of the world and what the world tells you you ought to have. Don't get caught up in all that sort of stuff. Live light, but carry heavy.
Okay, so I'm backing up here in the book. I've gone back to a section that I highlighted. It's on page 54, talking about becoming a judgmental. And we led in the first half hour around that. This is a big one for me and for the population, right? You're saying become judgmental. Judging is about taking a stand for yourself and for right or wrong. Why do you say that?
What's always funny is I will say something on Facebook or social media, and some holier than thou will jump in and say, now, Larry, remember, judge not lest ye be judged. You shouldn't be judgmental. The first thing I say, do you understand that telling me not to be judgmental is you judging me? First of all, anytime you tell somebody they're judgmental, you've just made a judgment and proved that you, too, are judgmental. And if you're going to quote the Bible to me and that verse of Scripture, judge not lest ye be judged, I wish you'd just go ahead and not be selective and quote the entire verse. Because the entire verse says, judge not lest ye be judged, for by the same measure you too will be judged. In other words, if you're going to judge people based on their financial situation, you are going to be judged on your financial situation. So if my financial situation is good and I'm in control of my financial situation, judge away. I've got every right to judge about that because I am willing to be judged in the same way. If I'm going to judge customer service, that means that you get to judge my customer service. I deliver great customer service. Let's get after it. Go ahead and judge me.
You know what I love about this is the simplicity of it. A lot of people will go around in a fog saying, well, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't know what they're saying. There's no way anybody can read this book and not know what you are saying.
Well, I appreciate that. My goal is to write on such a level, and I have people who criticize my writing. You can go on there and they say, duh, nothing but common sense, heard this my whole life. Well, sure you have. I can't imagine where in your life you haven't heard this. Where have you been? It's not whether you've heard it. It's not whether you know it. It's whether you're living it and doing it. That's what really matters. And my goal is to write very simply so people, just like you said, I've never gone into business or sold or gone on stage like a lot of people who say, I just want to be easy to agree with. Not my goal. I want to be impossible to disagree with. How can anybody disagree with the fact that you ought to live your life in such a way that you can be judged by the same standard you judge others?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing.
I think it's a very good thing. And as well, on page 61, it leads into one of the other ways to grow a pair, becoming totally self-reliant. One of my favorites, and one of the reasons I believe women entrepreneurs do not succeed is because they are not self-reliant. They rely on their husband's income, their savings account, their RRSPs, or what do you call that in the States, a 401k? The 401k, and so on. Business owners, in my opinion, and it's not a humble opinion, it's my opinion, business owners don't succeed because they're not hungry enough. They are not.
They don't have a strong enough why. You've heard me talk about that before. A lot of people talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
That if you have a reason, a why this must work, you won't rely on anybody. You won't rely on anybody else's money. You won't rely on that circle of friends. Everybody says, well, I can be successful in business because I have a huge support system. Trust me, the minute you need them, chances are they won't be there. That support system will go away.
And
it's funny that they're there for you as long as you don't need them. The minute you really do need them, they're going to be a little hard to get on the phone.
Yeah, that's a good
So what are you going to do? It's about self-reliance. You are the only one.
And I'll tell you, when I moved here and changed my life, my why was as simple as I needed to put food in the fridge. I wanted to eat that day. I was
It's
totally
amazing how hunger can be such a great motivator, isn't it?
It really can. Hunger, roof over your head, some of those basic things. And most business owners are lazy. They're totally lazy. That's what I see. That's what I believe. That's what I'm out to help change as well.
Well, I wrote about that in one of my previous books, People Are Idiots and I Can Prove It, how we mostly talk a good game, but very few people walk their talk. They don't actually do what it takes. They know what it takes. They just don't want to do what it takes. And it does come down to laziness most of the time.
Yeah, it does. And one of the other things that really caught my attention here in conjunction with that, the laziness, on the flip side, on page 69, you're talking about being prepared as a way to grow a pair. One thing that I've learned is that many people have grown up not knowing, not learning how to set goals, and therefore not being prepared, and therefore missing opportunities.
You're absolutely right about that, Pat. They're not prepared. They've never done the study. What I'm always amazed at is people write me and say, I wonder why my business isn't doing very well. I started it 6 months ago, and now it's not going the way I thought. I had no idea I was going to have this much trouble hiring and managing people. Have you ever hired and managed people? Did you even read a book on how to hire? Did you read a book on managing people? Did you just think that you could go out there and wing it? You can't do that. People have no preparation. Before you go into anything, you need to read everything you can get your hands on. You need to interview people in your industry that are doing well. You need to interview people who didn't make it and say, what did you do wrong, so you can avoid those same pitfalls. It's about preparation, study, advanced learning. Learn from other people's experience. Don't have that experience yourself. Go learn.
Well, one of the interesting statistics that you quote all the time is how few people actually read books now.
56% of people never read a book after high school. I think that's alarming. You know, as Jim Rohn said, we would all do better if we just knew better. The reason I wrote a blog the other day that said, let me tell you why people are not successful. They're just stupid. They are stupid. They don't read books anymore. Everything you want to know, I don't care what it is, everything you want to know, somebody's written about. They have.
Yeah.
Now, wouldn't you be better off if you had that information? I think that you probably would.
I totally agree with that, and that just one of the trademark introduction pieces for you, that kind of came out sloppy, but what I'm getting at here is on page 73 in Ways to Grow a Pair, you talk about being a pit bull. Now, you've trademarked that. You're the trademarked pit bull of personal development, but what does that have to do with being or growing a pair when you're talking about things like continue to learn, get prepared, apologize?
Know what you believe and grab onto it. Anybody who's ever been around pit bulls or owned a pit bull, I love the breed personally, but a pit bull is famous because this is what they were raised for and trained for. All bulldog-type dogs were raised to do this. It was to grab on and never let
go. You can't drag them off. You can't pull them off. You can't beat them off. If you get a really crazy, rabid pit bull like we sometimes see on the news and so forth, sometimes they have to be killed in order to get them to break their hold on something. They will not let go. That's how I am. I have a handful of things that I believe that I don't care how smart you are or what you've been through. You'll never make me change the way I believe about these things because I've studied and I've researched and I've lived it where these things are true for me. Do you have something in your life that you'll never let go of? Because through your own experience and through your study, research, and personal experience, you know this to be true. Pat, I know in your life you've got two or three, maybe more, a whole lot more. You've got things that I could never convince you otherwise. Right?
Right, absolutely.
Because you know they're true.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never let them go till the day you die and then some. You know they're true. Some people live their life so wishy-washy that they're just saying, oh, okay. And this is how we end up with all these idiots who win elections for stupid people. They sit home and have never bothered to do the research, prepare, to have an opinion of their own. They've never lived enough life to have experiences on which they can form opinions. They sit back and wait for other people to tell them how to think and what to believe.
That's what I find so interesting around election time when you're in coffee shops, on a bus, anywhere, people saying, who are you voting for? Who are you voting for? Who are you voting for? It's like, go do your homework and figure it out for yourself.
Yep. And so that's why I tell people to become a pit bull. Know what's right for you. It may not be right for everybody. I do things that are not right for everybody, but by God, they're right for me, and I'm not giving them up. They mm-hmm. work. I get the results that I want. I hold on to those things and always will.
Well, and one of the reasons that holds true is because you have clear priorities. And you do say in the book that your actions determine your priorities. What I really love here is the quote that you have, the tip that you give to help people understand and know what your priorities are. You believe it's simple because why? What should they do?
Well, all you got to do is track your time, your energy, and your money. Where do you put all of your energy? What does your time go toward? And where do you spend your money? Give me 5 minutes with your checkbook, your credit card statement, and let me walk through your house and I'll tell you everything that's important to you. I can tell by how you spend your money. It won't take me 15 minutes with you. I can tell everything that's important to a human being just by figuring out what they spend their money on. I know what's important to you, Pat. I've known you, what, a year and a half, 2 years now?
Yeah.
I know what's important to you. How do I know? Because where do I see you? I see you spending money at conferences and events and buying books and doing research and investing in yourself. I know that constant personal self-improvement is important to you. Education is important to you because I see you spend your money that way, right?
True.
Okay.
True.
I can do that with anybody.
And again, that's what I so love about this book, and I love being around you. You simplify it. And when things are simple, seriously, when things are simple, because we overcomplicate things, Larry. I see that with my clients all the time. They make things so complicated, therefore it feels hard, therefore they do nothing.
Yeah.
Simple.
Well, I try to make it simple, and we talked about this some, because at the end of the book, there can't be any excuses. I've tried to be so simple that it was impossible to disagree with a few points that I've made because I don't want there to be any excuses. I believe people, and this is one of the things I opened my speech with, I believe people want success, wealth, health. They want all good things to be hard. Because if they buy into the idea that they are hard,
mm-hmm.
then they'll have an excuse for not doing well.
Yep.
And I don't believe there are any excuses.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I want to shift a little bit. We've just got a few minutes left, and for sure I want to cover some key points here around your rules when it comes to business. And you have a number one rule for life and business. I've heard it said a few times over the past few days, and I love that. It's simple. What's your advice?
It is my number one rule for life and business. Do what you said you would do, when you said you would do it, the way you said you would do it. Do what you said you would do, when you said you would do it, the way you said you would do it. That's what your customers want from you as a business person. By the way, as a business person, that's what you want from your customers. That's what parents want from their children. That's what children want from their parents. That's what husbands want from their wives and wives want from their husbands. That's all anybody in life wants. They want everybody around them to do what they said they would do, when they said they would do it, the way they said they would do it. It's a very simple principle that if we all lived our lives around that idea, we would have a different world.
And just imagine what that world would look like, feel like, and be like. One of the things you talk about here in the section on Grow a Pair in Business is around work. And you're saying most importantly, remember to bring more value than you cost. And this, again, rung true for me because my background is in human resources. And I can remember every year when it was time to do budget, I would pull in some key managers and say, here's one thing to remember. When the CEO, the executive director, the whomever, the grand poobah would come by and put everyone in a room and scan the room, you be sure to be the one, when you connect eyes, that you're the one that brings value and must stay.
That's very good advice, and that's what everybody should do, even if they are a solopreneur.
Mm-hmm.
They need to walk up and say, am I adding more value than I cost? Do I bring that kind of value to my customers? But do you bring that kind of value to your own business? It's a tough thing for some people to answer.
It really is, and in this day and age where just about, in my industry, every other person is hanging out a shingle that says, coach, then you know what I'm talking about. Do you bring value? What makes you different? Are people going to get that return on investment? You be the one, and that's the way I head out every day. I be the one that speaks to and represents value. One of the other things you talk about is the key to business success, which is keep moving.
Now, yeah, sometimes we get bogged down. We do, especially if we're being successful. We get caught up in our success and we kick back and say, now I can relax.
Yeah.
No, that's the time to really get going. By the way, the best time to make a sale is when you've just made a sale. You're on a high. You're on an emotional high. You remember what it took to close that one.
Yeah.
Go make another one.
Yeah.
Some people make a sale and then sit back on their butt, put their feet up, and wait for something good to happen next week. Oh, I did good this week. Now I'll work next week. No, that's dumb. So you got to constantly be moving. And hopefully you're moving forward. But even when you find yourself not and you're starting to slide, that's the time to redouble your efforts so you can keep moving. Never stop. The people who stop get crushed.
Yeah, and quite frankly, it just feels good to keep moving. It's a great place to be. And so as we talk about moving, and I want to talk about benefits, because there's absolutely so many distinct benefits of growing a pair in the last few minutes. What would you say, Larry Winget, in your opinion, are three or the four great benefits of growing a pair, whether in life and or in business?
One, you'll like yourself better.
Ooh.
You will feel better about who you are if you know what you believe and you stand up for those beliefs. There's no way you can get around that one. Now, think about what happens to people who know who they are and stand up for who they are and feel better about themselves. They have more charisma. They attract better people to them. They will be more confident. Confidence on the job will probably mean that you perform better on the job. You will serve your customers better. You will make more sales, meaning that you will probably make more money. More money means that you will be able to afford a better house. A better house means that your family will be happier and have more room, and you'll have more freedom. You'll have a bigger bank account. Bank account only does one thing for you, gives you freedom. All that by growing a pair and understanding who you are, what you believe, and knowing how to stand up for yourself. Those look like good side effects to me.
No, those, yeah, got my vote. Larry, before we do run out of time, I want to make sure that we let our listeners know how they can get a copy of this phenomenal book, best-selling book, Grow a Pair.
They should be able to get it at any of their local bookstores. You can certainly get it online at Amazon or any of the online bookstores. And if people want to find out more about me, just go to Larry Winget, W-I-N-G-E-T, LarryWinget.com. Follow me on YouTube. I put out an Ask Larry Anything where I get questions from all over the world. People asking me questions. That's done once a week. And they can follow me on Facebook at Larry Winget Fan Page.
And quite frankly, that is a great page to go to because there's a lot of learning going on there. A lot of sharing.
I appreciate you saying that. It's a book. I mean, it's a page that's very interactive.
Yep.
Where I actually post things to get you thinking, and then we have discussions around those things. And I encourage everybody really might want to start there, the Larry Winget fan page.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of information, videos, everything that they want to know about me, they'll be able to find.
And all kinds of interesting people, and that's what makes it so fun for me. All kinds of interesting people show up, and therefore really stimulate conversation, interaction, and education. That's a lot of value in one fan page. So, Larry, moving forward, what's next for Larry Winget?
More television. I just signed a contract for a new TV show, so people will be able to see me more on television. My other television show, Big Spender, is still being aired around the world, so I know you can catch that in some places. You'll also see another book coming from me next year on a new topic.
And that's all you're going to tell us.
That's all I'm going to say. Same point of view, new topic.
Totally love it. Love you. Love your information. Larry Winget, this has been just an amazing and delightful hour. On behalf of my listeners here in the local area and on the net, I do thank you sincerely for making the time, having the interest, and sharing these great tips on grow a pair, how to stop being a victim, take back your life, your business, and your sanity. Thank you, Larry Winget.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, well, it is the month of December, and sadly, I'm here to say this is the last episode of The Best of Business with me, Pat Michu. Moving on to different medium. It's been a pleasure for the last 3 years, and a special shout out to my producer, Ed, without whom I would not have grown, succeeded, and moving on. So thank you all. Have a great December. Have a great Christmas. And I'll see you out there in the world somewhere.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this amazing opportunity of a phenomenal interview with a phenomenal author. My name is Pat Michu, founder of WealthyWomenLeaders.com, and I am about to bring to you an incredible 30 minutes of solid content with Larry Winget, a 6 times New York Times Wall Street Journal best-selling author, translated into over 20 languages. He is a member of the International Speaker Hall of Fame. He has starred in his own television series and appeared in national television commercials. Larry is also a regular contributor on many news shows on the topics of money, one of our favorites, personal success, parenting, and business. Larry is also the trademarked pit bull of personal development. Today we're coming together to talk to all of you and share some tips with you based on his book, You're Broke Because You Want to Be, How to Stop Getting By and Start Getting Ahead. I'm so grateful that Larry has made the time to be with me today for all of you and for me. And my intention on this interview, we'll be with you for about 30 minutes, is to really give you some solid information from real people on how to go from surviving to thriving. And the fact, and here's the good news, people, it's never too late. And we want to give you some specific action steps that you can take today. So get your pen handy, get ready. You're in for really some very solid content and things you really can do today. Larry, welcome to the call.
Well, I appreciate you having me. We're good at doing this, so I'm looking forward to it.
We are good. And so I will mention to the listeners, to the audience, this is our third interview based on some really fabulous books that you've written, Larry. I love your books. They are, like, easy to read, quick to read, and really chock full of action-oriented tips. There's no fluff here. So,
well, I appreciate that. I'm not one for being real philosophical when it comes to self-help. Mine's about giving you some actionable ideas. I've read way too many books that talk about the theory of success.
Yeah.
I'm saying just do this. Don't argue with me. Do these things, and you'll be in a better place.
You know, one of the things that makes me chuckle is that I have a really strong community at my church, And I was telling people at church this week that I was going to be talking to you, and we're going to talk about money, we're going to talk about going from broke to rich and wealthy and so on. And there's a few people who give me a funny look. And I had the book with me in my purse, and I pulled it out, and I said, hey, looky here, right in the beginning of Larry's book, he has a great quote. It is, a party gives laughter, wine gives happiness, but money gives everything. Straight out of Ecclesiastes 10:19. And on that note, let's hop in and let's talk about, I mean, I love the title, broke. So there is a difference though, Larry, right, between poor and broke. Let's start off with that.
Okay, and it's an important distinction that needs to be drawn, mm-hmm. because the minute I say people are broke because they want to be, people start in on me about the people in Somalia, and they don't choose to be the way they are. Those are poor people.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference in being poor. Poor is a condition. Jesus said the poor will be with you always, and they will. They always have been. They always will be. There's nothing in the world that anybody can do except help these people suffer more in comfort, mm-hmm. because they are going to suffer. They don't have the capacity. They don't live in the right place. They're not the opportunities. That's the way it is. That is a different thing completely than being broke. Broke is a situation you find yourself in based on the fact that you either under-earn or overspend. It is a temporary situation unless you choose for it to be become your permanent condition.
And one thing I love that you said in the book on page 2, right after your quote there, is, I can fix broke.
Yep.
That's great. People should be sitting up right now. So one thing you've taught me so well is, in writing a book, you state who the book is for and who the book is not for. And you write very clearly in here who this book is for.
Yeah, this book, it really is for people who have found themselves in a situation where they don't have money on hand to pay their bills, to grow their business, to move farther ahead. They have made mistakes, and everybody makes mistakes. I've yet to find anybody that hadn't made mistakes with money in some way, and now they find themselves in a tough situation. That can be fixed. That's what I mean. I can fix broke.
Yeah. So for all of you who are listening, if we've got your attention and you've got your pen handy, great. Let's get going. And for those of you who already believe this is not for you, hang up and go do something else.
And I'm glad you said that, because if there's ever a book that a title that anybody ever wanted to argue with me over, it would be this one, when I say you're broke because you want to be. Even when you posted that we were going to be talking about this book, people started to argue with you, because everybody says, I don't want to be. Where I start with this book and with everything is, your life is how you want it to be. Otherwise, it would be different. And so for those who want their life to be different, they have to understand they created this situation of brokenness. Take responsibility for it, and now be willing to do what it takes to fix it.
And I'm so honored to do this interview with you, because I was one of those people. You know, for 22 years in my marriage, I was there based on choice. And I got sick and tired of living in a broke relationship with, you know, a bank account that was pathetic after all those years. So I made a decision. And that's what I love about this book, because one thing you say is, if you didn't want to be broke, you wouldn't be broke. I got fed up. I got sick and tired of compromising. I made a decision at age 55, and I turned things around. That's my point at the beginning of the call. It's never too late. So let's talk a bit about how money defines you.
Well, and people think that is so demeaning of me to say that money defines who you are. And people like to argue that point, Pat. I know you've heard people argue, especially pious, churchy people.
Yep.
They want to argue that money should never define us, and these people are living with their head in the sand. Money will determine the quality of education you get. Money will determine the quality of house you live in. It will determine the quality of health care that you receive. It will determine the quality of legal representation that you have if you ever find yourself in need of legal representation. It will determine how big your burial plot is, how many people come to your funeral, how many people attend your wedding, how big your Your headstone will be on your grave. It will determine everything in your life. It will determine how, what kind of education that your children get. So anybody who says money doesn't define them, they are living in oblivion. It defines everything about your life, your past, your present, and your future.
I totally agree. And, you know, as a business coach, and I work with entrepreneurs, many of whom in the beginning say, well, I only want to make enough to get by. And so much like I said on this call, then hang up and go do something else, I tell those people, get away from me because money touches everything, and it is important. I love the quote you have in here by Dr. Robert Schuller, a person I admire and respect. Keep on succeeding, for only successful people can help others, period. And the fact that you state money always matters. So you've covered some of those points there. Let's move on. I know people want to get into the nuts and bolts, and I know that we could use 5 hours on this topic. But you mentioned that it is easier than you think. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's if people will just stop and stop making acquisition of wealth such a complicated process. You know, there's only two ways to have more money in life. Earn more, spend less. Everybody can do both of those things. Right now, you could have more money if you spent less than you were currently spending. You would have more money. If you went out and earned more money, you would have more money. But we have a tendency to complicate this. And see, I believe that we all want to complicate everything.
Yeah.
Because if we make it hard and believe that it's hard, then we'll have excuses for not doing it. I don't believe there's ever an excuse. So what I try to do in all of my books, regardless of what I'm talking about, is remove the excuses.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're talking about here is for people to absolutely simplify this process, first of all, in their mind. Stop believing that being rich, having more money, is a complicated process. It is not complicated. It's very, very simple. If you made the decision right now to cut out one thing in your life, whether it be cable television, you would have more money next month than you have right now today. If you did a bunch of those things put together and added to it that you were going to go earn more money, you could have quite a bit more money next month than you have this month. So it's understanding how simple it really is and breaking it down into little bitty pieces that I know we're going to talk about here that really makes it so manageable, so easy to go out and attack and take action on.
Hear, hear. You know, and one of the sections that really caught my eye actually was one of your titles here on page 50. You're saying in big bold print, spend your way to rich. Now, I've got to say that caused me to shake my head and go like, what? What are you talking about there?
On spend your way to rich?
Which, yeah.
Spend your way to which?
Spend your way there. Yeah, and so you were talking about, you know, the TV show that you were on, and that was really my first exposure to you, Big Spender. And you were referencing in here the woman who had $600,000 worth of clothes. Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, 57 credit cards, $600,000 worth of clothes and shoes and purses and all that sort of stuff. We have a tendency to spend our money on things that do not move us forward. From an intellectual standpoint, from a status standpoint, all those things. We just spend our money on dumb things. When my wife and I, and I've been through it all, I grew up dirt poor. I made a decision I was going to get rich. And by the way, it always starts with a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did whatever it took along the way to make sure that happened. I only had two things I could do. I could work harder than everybody else. I could work longer than everybody else. That was it. I didn't have superior intelligence. It was just the willingness to work harder and longer than anybody was willing to do. And so that's what I had going for me. And when my wife and I then became wealthy and then went to work one day and lost it all because the corporation commission ruled that what I did was no longer going to be legal, excuse me, I had to make some decisions. So one of the decisions my wife and I made in rolling back everything that we were spending money on, and we did circle the wagons and tightened our belts in a way like people would not believe, but we decided that we would spend money on our own education. We would always invest in ourselves. And we didn't look at that as an expense, but as an investment. Because investments, expenses, you spend your money and it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you've used it up. It's over. Investments always yield a return. And we invested on ourselves in education. So we bought the books, attended the seminars, listen to the, at the time they were tapes, not CDs, but that's what we invested in.
And I still get that because when I moved 5 years ago and transformed my life, started all over again with nothing, that is where the little bit of money I had went as well and has multiplied. And we're going to talk about that, too, as how you multiply money. One of the comments you've made in this book, too, which I believe is very helpful to people, is you talk about following the money. What does that mean when many people are sitting out there saying, but I don't have any?
Oh, you know, I can tell everything that's wrong in your life by following the money. It's like a good murder mystery that you watch on television. You know, they always say, follow the money. That's what the cops always say. Follow the money and you'll find out the guy who did it. Well, I say the same thing applies in your own life. If you want to know who the culprit is in your life, the reason you don't have any money, follow your money. I could, and you saw me do this back when I was on Big Spender. I could walk into someone's house, do a 5-minute walk through their house, spend 5 minutes with their credit card statement and their checking account and tell you everything that's wrong with their life. Because following the money will tell me what's important to you. Your time, your energy, and your money always go to what's important to you. If you tell me being financially secure is important to you, and believe me, everybody says that, but I look at your house and your bank statement and I find out you're spending all your money at the mall on new clothes and a fancy car and a big TV and all that, well, then it's only lip service. Because while you say you want to be financially secure, your actions by following the money tells me you're more interested in looking cool and being cute and being accepted and having all the status symbols.
And so true. And, you know, one of the things I love about this book as I read through it and worked through it is in fact a workbook. So where you're giving the tips like that, for instance, follow the money, and now some great advice around it. There's also sections in this book where you can just kind of work through this stuff and get a real complete picture for yourself. And as I was doing that, and I moved into the section where you're talking about take responsibility for your situation, experience remorse. And what I highlighted here was you wrote, I want you to hurt and I want you to hurt bad. Mm-hmm. I want wailing and gnashing of teeth of biblical proportion. I want to get some emotion in there. Why are you saying that?
Well, I really do think I'm about the only guy in the personal development industry that really talks about remorse. Most people say, oh, honey, just forgive yourself. It's okay. Well, I want you to forgive yourself at some point, but before you do that, I want you to hurt really, really bad. I've discovered that when people tie emotion to their stupidity, that's when they make long-term change. If you say, oh, you know, everybody does this. I mean, we all make mistakes. How many times have you heard? We all make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Forgive yourself and move on. Mm-hmm. No, don't. Stop and realize you've been an idiot, and you need to hurt over this, and you need to feel bad, and you need to look at your family and say, I've screwed up, and I've done them wrong. Maybe you ought to go look your kids in the eye and say, you know, you didn't get to go to a good college because I was stupid and that new car was more important to me than the fact you got a good education. That'll make you wake up. So I like people to hurt and hurt really bad. I want some real negative emotion. And I am a bigger believer in negative than positive because I think we make more change when we hurt and are uncomfortable than we ever do when we feel good about ourselves. So take a moment if you've been stupid with your money. Realize where you've been stupid. Feel really, really bad about it. Because remember, you make positive change in your life when you first got negative about your life.
Yeah.
And then after you've been negative, then and started to take positive action, then forgive yourself and move on. But not until you've hurt a bit.
Yeah, and so you wrote, you need to steal your confidence with anger. And what I loved was the progression for moving forward. Remorse leads to anger, leads to determination. And again, the worksheet you had in here was like a sample expense sheet, if you will, where you wrote down the item, the amount, and then a check mark. And then there was, I think it was popcorn at the movie for $4, and you put beside it, stupid. So that worksheet is really enlightening because for many people, until they see it in writing, they won't get it.
Well, I'm a big believer in writing things down, and I don't mean have an app for that or anything. And people always say, you know, you can go online, Larry, and find a budget sheet. I don't want you to do any of that. I want you to take a pad of paper and a pen and really start tracking how you spend your money so you know where every penny goes. Until you know what your financial situation looks like, you cannot figure out how you're going to fix it. And I have yet to deal with anyone who can really give me a good, solid answer on where all their money goes. And the only way to find that out is to track it. And I mean track every penny of it, every single penny of it, especially if you're in trouble.
Especially the popcorn. Because it's
yeah, you know, people pull into a gas station and they'll fill up their car with gas and maybe they'll not pay at the pump. They'll run inside to pay because if they run inside to pay, you know, they can pick up a Coke or a candy bar or a snack or something like that. And not realizing, they think they bought gas, but what they did was spend an extra $4 or $5 inside the gas station buying crap that they first of all didn't need, probably wasn't healthy, and they don't understand that's an expense that they aren't probably tracking. They thought it was a trip to the gas station, and after all, they needed gas.
Yeah, so true. And on that, you also indicate on page 84, when we start moving into the section of, like, where do you start? And one of your comments in big bold print, again, is stop spending. It's the hole principle. When you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. You list here there are three necessities in life.
Yep, shelter, food, and bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And what I like for people to understand when I talk about those things, those are the commitments you have to make to yourself. First of all, your bills are a commitment. I like for people to become committed to their commitments. We've reached a time, see, I believe that financial independence, first of all, starts with integrity. You made a deal. When you took out that credit card, you signed a statement that you would pay that bill this amount minimum on this date. That doesn't mean that you get to shirk your responsibility just because it's become inconvenient for you to make that payment. For all financial independence begins with integrity of keeping your word, doing what you said you would do. You said you would take care of your family. That's where shelter and food comes in. You said that you are a person of integrity when you signed that contract for your mortgage and for your utilities and for your credit cards and all of that. So be a person of integrity and meet your bills. Even when it's inconvenient and you have to cut back on other areas of your life, you do what you said you would do.
Mm-hmm. And in line with that, and I love for people to have writer-downers, and here comes one right now. You give in the book the three most important numbers in your life.
Yep. Most people think it would be their IQ, and it's not. It's the credit score.
Mm-hmm.
Your credit score, and I just did a story recently on the news about how we have an entire generation of kids who do not even understand what credit score really means to them. They don't understand that your credit score will determine your employment. It will determine how much you pay for your house, how much you pay for every loan you ever take, whether it be a car loan or whatever. It makes an incredible difference in your future. So protect your credit score, and you can destroy your reputation and your credit score in an instant. Both of those things, and it will take you years to fix those things.
And this is one of the most important pieces in the whole book. So for those of you who are listening, you need to run out and get this book and read pages 88 and 89 in particular to get more information on this topic, because Larry gets right down to the nitty-gritty on what your overall goal should be for your rating, and most people don't even know that. But for the sake of our time, we're going to move right along. And another statement that jumped off the page for me when you said, getting out of debt and becoming financially secure is a slow process. This generation,
yeah.
I mean, people in this day and age, they want it all now.
You know, it's kind of like losing weight. You didn't get fat overnight. Well, you didn't get broke overnight either. Chances are it took you a long time through a lot of really bad habits, just like bad eating habits, bad spending habits. And so it will take you some time to dig yourself out of debt, repair your problem, and move toward prosperity. It is a slow process. So understand that going in. This is going to take you some time. And because it takes time, people have a tendency to get discouraged and quit and give up along the way. And they'll go, oh, it's so bad, I'll never fix it. And they fall right back into their bad habits, sometimes the worst habits. You know, 50% of the people who file bankruptcy twice because they didn't learn the lesson the first time. Learn this lesson and understand ahead of time. This is going to be slow and painful to build your credit history and to get financial independence back in your life.
And I was going to move into that bankruptcy section because I see and hear so many people go for the quick fix. And that's what they believe it is. Bankruptcy is a quick fix and I'll just carry on.
Well, bankruptcy is a solution. And I'm not saying it should be 100% avoided in all cases. I'm saying it should never be your first option. It's just like when you go to the doctor and the doctor said, well, you could start doing this and taking vitamins and eating more healthy and exercise, or we could just do an operation.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, I'll just do the operation because I don't want to go through, eating healthy and exercise and doing the right stuff.
That's
how some people think.
Yeah.
And bankruptcy is kind of like going for the extreme. It's like going for the operation instead of trying to turn your life around the correct way.
Yeah. And as you move in through the book here, you're giving some really great suggestions under the topic of the section of everything counts. Don't think something is too insignificant to make a difference. Some of the examples, I'm going to skim over them because I want to get into more of the meat here where you had some really surprising tips or action steps. So everything counts by way of giving up cable television, get a cheaper car, move. That probably caused a few people to shake their head. Get a new cell phone plan. Give up your high-speed internet. And those are some of the common ones that we see. But where I really dug deep in here, you started talking about money multipliers, and then you started moving into the common sense. Let's spend a minute on the money multiplier practice and then into some of these things where you're talking about picking up the penny.
All right. I like to pick up the penny thing, by the way.
I did, too.
I still pick up pennies. I will stop, walk back, and pick one up in the middle of the street. I mean, I am still, and I got a lot of money, but I still obsessively will stop and pick up a penny. Because I understand how if you pick up a penny every single day and you throw it in a jar, all that stuff adds up.
Yeah.
And besides that, I think it's just being respectful of what money is and what it represents. I respect money. I don't think it ought to be something that ought to be thrown on the ground and stepped on. I treat it with care.
And
that's why, you know, all my money that's in my pocket is facing the same direction. It's in numerical order with the ones and the fives, the tens, the twenties, the hundreds. I carry it and I respect it and I don't just wad it up and throw it down and keep it smashed in my pocket. I think we have to show money, physical money, respect. And part of that comes from down to the pick up a penny.
That's powerful. That's a powerful line. And on page 128, you actually laid out the exercise here about the money multiplier. And I've got to say, I've never seen that before. That really caused me, again, to go like, wow, and to understand the speed at which money multiplies.
Yeah, my dad, when I was a kid, used to always say, Larry, and we did this for years and years and years. He said, okay, Larry, so if somebody hired you to go to work for one penny and they doubled your pay every single day, would you take the job? And I'd say, I'm not going to work for a penny. A penny a day? Dad, I'm not doing that. And it was a great exercise in multiplication tables, first of all, so it kept me smarter. But then, and if you ask the average person on the street, I'm going to hire you today for a penny and I'll double your wages every single day. They're going, well, you know, by the end of the week, what? Am I making, what, 64 cents a day? Yeah, you're making 64 cents a day. But on day 30, if you went to work for a penny today and we doubled your wages every single day, on day 30, we would be paying you $5,368,000 a day.
Yeah. Yeah, that exercise alone, I mean, buy the book, people, just for page 128. It's an eye-opener. And you just move along in this book giving some really great action steps such as carry cash. This is, I don't know that people can wrap their head around that, Larry.
Well, I have a lot of people want to argue this. First of all, they tell me that's stupid to carry cash. It's stupid to admit that you carry cash because you will be robbed. You know what? Okay. If I get mugged on the street, I want something to give the mugger. I do. I want something to give the mugger. I don't want him to say, are you kidding me? All you've got is a lousy platinum card?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with a platinum card? I'd rather hand him a pocket full of cash so he went away and left me intact. So I think it's smart to carry cash just from a safety standpoint, and yet that's one of the areas that people want to argue with me. It's not safe to carry cash. It is safe to carry cash. The other thing is, if people carried cash and didn't rely on plastic, they would understand the principle of when it's gone, it's gone. You have to stop spending when you no longer have cash in your pocket. You would also come to understand that every time you buy something, it actually does make your stack of money smaller. You see, when we don't keep track of our money very well, and very few people do keep track of their money very well, and they use plastic, they don't understand that every time they pull that plastic out, the amount of money in their account gets smaller. And yet when you carry cash and you're doling that out, you go, I don't have very much left. And then you start to say, I'm going to be careful with what I've got left. It just changes the way you feel and think and act with your money when you're using cash. I'm a big believer in cash. And I'm also a big believer, and I know you're probably going to get this, I like the one I call the Tuck of Benjamin.
Yeah, I had never heard that.
Well, it's because you're Canadian and you don't have Benjamin.
Oh, but I do like looking at $100 bills.
Well, and in the United States, a Benjamin is a $100 bill, and it has a picture of Benjamin Franklin on it. And I believe that everybody should tuck a Benjamin in their wallet somewhere, because if you always have $100 bills in your pocket and you make sure you never spend it no matter what, it's tucked deep inside the recesses of your wallet, you're not broke.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you've got ready spending money or not. Whether you're willing to spend the money, don't have the money to spend on whatever it is, if you stick that Benjamin back in there, that $100 bill, you still know that no matter what happens, you're not broke. So that changes the way you feel about yourself, changes the way you think about yourself. You're not broke. And I tell you what, carrying a big wad of cash in your pocket gives you a sense of confidence. You will stand taller and walk more confidently if you have cash in your pocket.
I can totally endorse that, because when I moved here and started over with nothing, I had a $5 bill in my wallet, and that was my Benjamin for the time being. And that made a huge difference psychologically, emotionally, financially, just to support everything that you're saying. And as I feared, we are running out of time, and we're down to our last minute, Larry. What would be your best words of advice, based on the content, the book, the audience on the edge of their chair right now, that we could leave them with?
I would say, first of all, believe that you can have more money. Get that thought of brokenness out of your brain. Secondly, start tracking how you're currently spending your money so you know where it goes. And third, start to really make it a priority to spend the money on the things that really matter. That means keeping your commitments and doing the right thing with your money and investing in yourself. You do those things, and next month you'll have a better month than you had this month. I promise, no matter how much money you have or don't have, you will change your level of prosperity.
And that's what life is all about. And I would add to that, go out and get the book, You're Broke Because You Want to Be, How to Stop Getting By and Start Getting Ahead. This is one of the best books I have read. And as Larry is my mentor and coach, and part of his advice and recommendation to me was to read 100 books, this was book number 92 for me so far in the last 7 months. This is one of my favorites. Larry Wingett, always a pleasure, great content. And if people aren't running out the door right now to take action, of course, these people are, because the others have hung up and gone to do something else. So my sincere thanks to you again for another amazing 30 minutes of great content. It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Pat.
And to our listeners, I thank you again for spending time with us. Solid content for moving ahead and living your best life. Stay tuned. More to come on another call. Bye, everyone.